Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Fitzdog Radio. I'm just back from 11 days in the Arctic freeze of the Midwest, New York City, even Raleigh, North Carolina, which was the last leg of the trip, was fucking freezing. So I'm so happy to be back in LA. I got to tell you, though, I had asthma during the fires and then I left town. Asthma went away. Got back today, wheezing again, back on the inhaler. There are some toxic particles flying through the air. They say all the electric cars. See? Rest of the country? We're dying from our electric cars. The irony, the cruel irony of it. No, but it's bad. The air particles are bad, but the rest of California is beautiful. It's, I gotta tell you, sometimes I get burnt out and I take my life for granted, and then I go away for 11 days and I come back with a whole new set of eyes and ears. And I, you know, I've been bundled in three layers and thick hats for the last 11 days, and then I come back and I'm in a t-shirt. It was in a t-shirt today. I'm going to play golf in about 20 minutes with my son and his buddies, and then going to a movie with my chick tonight. Going to see the Bob Dylan movie. It's just a good life. People are better looking here. They just are. They're better looking. They're healthier. Restaurants are better. I don't know. I got a buddy that wants me to come over and take a cold plunge in a sauna tomorrow. And then it's just on and on. It's a good life. I got a nice little house. Fucking rest of the country can suck my dick. Coming back to Wisconsin this coming weekend. So right back into it. Milwaukee, if you're around. What else? I had fun. I had a blast on. Don't get me wrong. I love being on the road, and you know, like I stayed in the city in a hotel for a few nights, and then I stayed up at my sister's for, I think, just a night. Was it one night? Might have been one night. And I love my sister. She's a badass. She's just the coolest chick. She was like my closest friend growing up and through college, and she's just one of my favorite people in the world. And she brought a bunch of friends out to my show. I was in Nyack, West Nyack, New York, in a mall. And she brought a bunch of people out. And there was one particular, the Friday early show was packed. It was sold out. And then I snuck all my family in. And but they showed up late because we went to dinner first. So they were in the back row. It's like a 500-seat room. And their heads were against the wall in the back, which isn't bad for me. I don't like seeing their faces when I'm on stage talking about fucking their aunt. You know, my nephew's there. It's like a, coming on his aunt's belly. Who wants to hear about that? So, everybody came out. My buddy Johnny Trouble, he's the fire chief in Tarrytown where I grew up, or he's Sleepy Hollow. And then Kyle McGovern, my other buddy, who's now a Supreme Court Justice of New York State. He's a judge. My friend Lori came out. She gave me a blowjob in a CVS parking lot once. I brought that up on stage, even though I didn't remember that happening, but she did. I don't know if she was kidding, but I don't think it really happened. I think she made it up. Pete Scott was there, the great Pete Scott, Alex and Linda, just tons of friends. And all my cousins came. All my cousins, the Mulligans, some were up from Virginia. One took trains in from Long Island into the city, and then somebody else rented a car. They came from all over. It was really kind of touching. And I went out to dinner with them all before, which I never go out to dinner before my shows. It's so distracting. It fucks up my head. I don't like it. But when it's family, it's good. And I loved it. Anyway, then I came to Raleigh, and I wouldn't call it the Bible Belt, but it's North Carolina, and I was doing a lot of abortion jokes, and we had some walkouts. We had a couple people, and I always wonder, when they walk out on the abortion jokes, is it because they had an abortion, or that they don't want other people to have them, or they just don't want it talked about? Do they want this issue that apparently divides our nation, even though 70% of people want it to be legal? Apparently it divides our nation, but it shouldn't be discussed. Or maybe by a comedian. Who else is going to talk about it? So I'm back. Got this. Watched a lot of football yesterday. Chiefs look good. Real good. Eagles look real good. It's going to be an amazing Super Bowl. Excuse me. I got some snot. I'm going to watch it alone. I'm not into watching football games with other people, especially not the Super Bowl. I will, with my wife, she can watch it. If my son wants to come over, great. Daughter won't. She won't sit down for football. All right, let's get to it. We'll get to my guest in a second, but there's a lot of overheards I want to get to real quick. Overheards. I don't think we have a sting for that, but that's what it would sound like. Overheards. Did you hear that? Edward Farrell said he overheard somebody say, you can buy that at the dollar store for a dollar, which, by the way, is unusual. I've been to the dollar store recently, and they have shit that's $2. They have stuff that's $3. It's a misnomer. It's like saying I'm going to Burger King. He's not the king. He's a methamphetamine addict who's trying to make minimum wage. He's not a king. He thinks he's a king sometimes in an alley behind the Burger King after he gets his check. He's royalty. Oh, yeah. And then we got, I don't even know who wrote this in, but you'll know who you are. While attempting to study car electricity, I overheard the following interaction between a Starbucks barista and a lady customer. Lady customer said, what's the code for the restroom door? Barista said, 58945. 59845? Thank you. No, 58945. 59845? 58945. Customer. 58945. Thank you. 59845. Barista. 58945. What? 58945. Thank you. 58495. At that point, I couldn't take it anymore. I got up, walked over, unlocked the damn door, blocked it with a deadbolt, and did a quick whistle to the lady. She laughed and scooted towards the loo. Yeah, I can't remember that many numbers. No, I can. Six. I realize I can remember six numbers, but seven is impossible for me. Phone numbers are impossible. They need to be written down. My hotel room numbers, I remember for weeks. I don't know why, but I was just in room 630. And then I was in room 415 when I was in Nyack. And then when I was in the city, I was in room 231. And I will remember those numbers for weeks. I don't know why they stick in my head, because they have to. Paul Gillool in County Clare, Ireland said, two lads in Tralee talking about their night out on the lash the night before. One of the lads overconsumed and said, quote, I would have been a fair bit disappointed in myself if I died last night. Huh. Oh, the Irish. Sometimes I guess you're that hungover where you wish you could die. I don't miss that. I haven't drank in 35 years, and I do not miss hangovers. And apparently people tell me that if I were to start drinking again, I wouldn't last because the hangovers are so much worse when you get older. Everything's worse when you get older. Jesus. Brian G. says, guy number one said if you're sick, you should take iron. Guy number two says, what's iron do? Guy number one, confidently, well, it gives you the nutrition. Okay. Most people that want to talk about nutrition, like, I don't know how much I believe in supplements. I do take lion's mane for my brain. I take vitamin C. I take D12. I mean, I do it, but I don't know. There's a lot of experts that say it's all rubbish. Eat vegetables and shut the fuck up. And then you got guys like Rogan who swears that these pills will enhance your life, make your body better, make you last. I don't know if I'm going to last longer. I'm going to last as long as I'm meant to last. I don't need to extend this. Life's fine, but it's not forever. It shouldn't last more than 82 years. It's a bit much. Don't you think? 83? There's 82 and out. Brandon Reed said he overheard in Oakland at 7 a.m. person walking by on their phone, quote, I don't fuck with marshmallows. I'm with you. I do not fuck with marshmallows either. I think they're for children. If you're an adult and you're eating marshmallows, then you need to see a psychiatrist about your arrested development. Marshmallows are for children. I'm going to sell t-shirts after my shows. This is from Danny Mitchell, who said, at FitzDog's Thursday night Tulsa show, party of six fat chicks celebrating a birthday, the fattest one says, oh my God, why are jokes always so funny? Well, first of all, I don't know why we need to know that the women are overweight or that the largest of them said this, but I appreciate it. Tulsa's not a skinny town. Don't kid yourselves. Tulsa's got some girth. Darren Johnson said, he saw the movie The Road Dog, and he went on and on about how much you like. If you like Doug Stanhope, why did I forget his name for a second? He's the star of the movie. I have a small part. Doug is amazing, and this guy says it's the Leaving Las Vegas for comedians. It's free on Tubi. And all that. What's the last one? All right, that's it. All right, let's get to it. Speaking of Milwaukee, I'll be there at the Improv January 31st through February 2nd. Then I'll be at Brad Garrett's Club in Vegas February 10th through the 16th. Fontana, California at Stage Red February 22nd. Atlanta Punchline first week of March. St. Patrick's Day show at the Hollywood Improv March 15th. And then I'm coming to Ontario, Toronto, Pittsburgh, Tampa, La Jolla, Boston. Go to FitzDog.com, get some tickets, come out, see some live shows. We've been doing good lately, selling out a bunch of them. My guest today is a guy I've become good friends with over the last year. We've been developing a script for Bill Burr. He's a fine comedian. He is out on the road. He's got a tour. We're going to talk about that. He's got a podcast called Full Charge Power Hour. You've seen him on Comedy Central Presents, Live at Gotham, The Late Late Show on CBS, Last Comic Standing, Tosh.0, Last Call with Carson Daly. He's done it all. He's been on Joe Rogan's podcast. So I know you'll love him. We talked for a bit, had a lot of laughs. Please say hello to Matt Fulcheron. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not often that I introduce somebody that I have spent as much time on Zoom with as I have with this next gentleman. Matt Fulcheron, yeah. Welcome.
Great to be here, Greg. Thank you for having me. Do you know when you're on my radar as far as history is concerned, as far as like working together and stuff like that? You don't remember. I do, because
have you never brought this up before?
What's that?
Have you never brought this up before?
I've never brought it up. I've brought up some of it, okay. But I'll take you through it.
Yeah, because I remember. Please, please.
So we did a show together on Third Street, and it was booked by the Craig Kilborn guys in like 2000 or 1999. And I remember I was just starting, and they saw me at the Westwood Brew Co. And they thought I was hot shit, and they had me on. And it was for all, like, their family or their wives or coworkers or whatever.
The Craig Kilborn show?
Well, the gig I was on 3rd Street, I didn't do the Kilborn show.
Yeah.
They got my information. I'm like, cool, I'm doing the Kilborn show.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're
yeah.
like, no, you're doing this gig on 3rd Street.
Okay.
You know, and I went up. I didn't really know how to do a show with civilians in it yet. I was used to performing for comics.
Yeah.
Little rocky for me. You showed up, fucking crushed. I think you talked about Vince Champ or some other rapist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that. And then we worked.
The Vince Champ story, just to refresh people's memory, Vince Champ was a comedian. And I had an agent out of Chicago. And his name was, there was Scott Bass, but there was a guy, Ario Professional Artists. Doesn't matter. The guy has a roster of comics. Bill Burr is one of them. Mm-hmm. Kevin Brennan is one of them.
Yep.
And so we got to know each other because a lot of times we would do gigs together. So there's a guy named Vince Champ.
Right.
You know, black guy from the Midwest, very clean cut, clean act, sweet guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would work with him, but I must have worked with him 3 times. And I specifically remember... Because you'd always go out afterwards.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You're in like Des Moines, Iowa, or like a really small town in North Dakota, and like let's go to the fucking Bennigan's.
Yeah.
And
tear it up.
Tear it up.
Everybody ordered an app.
Yeah, because the students would take you.
Right.
And
of
they
course.
Had an expense account. You could get whatever you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were broke comics at the time.
Yeah, that's why we were at the college gig in the first place.
Oh my God. They were life rafts to us when we were starting out. Those
they paid
big
better
checks.
Than other gigs.
You get $800.
Yeah.
And then you try to line up 5 or 6 in a week and just rent a car and come home with $4,000 in your pocket.
There's your spring. There's your February.
There's you can stay in town for the rest of the month.
Beautiful.
So anyway, I specifically remember I would always say to Vince Champ, "Hey, let's go grab a burger," and he'd be like, "Nah, man, I'm gonna dip. You know, I got stuff to do." And I'm like, "Stuff to do? Like what?"
In South Dakota.
In South Dakota. And so then I found out later that Vince Champ is a notorious serial rapist,
right?
And not like a date rape. We're talking grabbing people and pushing them in the bushes kind of rapist.
Right.
And the reason they figured it out is that I think when DNA I don't know how they got his DNA. Somehow they traced DNA evidence and they pieced together his club dates over the past 10 years.
Right.
And he would never do it in the town he was in. He would drive 2 or 3 hours.
Oh,
commit
dude.
The crime and then go to the next place.
That's diabolical.
And on cruise ships that he was working.
Oh my God. Can you even get arrested for crimes on cruise ships?
No, those didn't count.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but then he goes to jail for many, many years. And so I go to a gig. It was in Wisconsin, and I'm about to go on. And I always ask them before I go on, is there anything to avoid? Like, was there a racial incident on campus, or did the football team, whatever? So they go, it's a woman. And she goes, yeah, don't bring up rape. And I said, why shouldn't I bring up rape? And she goes, well, we had Vince Champ here, and he went nearby, and I go, so let me get this straight. You called Ario Professional Artists, you booked a comedian, he raped, and then you called him back and asked if they had any
what
other comedians
got? You got any shoplifters? His signature is still on a brick at the Comedy and Magic Club.
No.
In Hermosa Beach.
Really?
Yeah. Still up there. They haven't gone over it because I think they kind of respect history over there.
Damn.
But I mean, hey, never forget, right?
Never forget.
If we wash over it, people might forget.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And yes. All right. So that
you
was...
had a good like 5 minutes on it, or like 3 minutes.
Yeah. I had a lot on Vince Champ. Yeah, I was kind of obsessed with it.
Right.
I was so disturbed.
Yeah.
All right. So what was the next?
Okay.
Time?
So then I'm emceeing for you at the San Francisco Punchline in January. Right. Of 2007.
Okay.
And the only reason I think you might remember it is because you were taping a CD kind of by yourself.
Uh-huh.
And around Saturday, you know, that's like a Wednesday through Saturday.
Yeah.
So around Friday, maybe you came up to me and you're like, hey, when you introduced me, can you act like you're excited that I'm coming up? And it just snapped, you know, it like... It woke me up. Yeah. Like sometimes you're not aware.
Yeah.
Of like how you're doing the professional part.
Right.
Of a job, and I go, oh yeah, of course, man. I'm sorry. And you kind of gave me a little because I think Molly overheard, and you're like, no, that's good. It's this thing. Yeah. He doesn't want to be here. It's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
You know, and that happened to me at I went out.
That's the tough thing about hosting is, it is true. It's the hardest gig on. People think the headliner has the hard job. MC goes up onto a cold stage. People are still arriving.
Yeah.
This is when all the drink orders are going in.
Oh, yeah.
This is where people are kind of acclimating themselves to being in an audience. They're trying to feel out, if these people are laughing, then I'll laugh and all that. So you got to go up. And say you're a lower energy comic.
Sure.
And you got to go up in a situation that really requires high energy comedy.
Totally.
And it requires you to do crowd work, which maybe you don't do or like to do.
Right.
And so you're forced to wear all these hats, and you've only got 10 minutes, if that.
Right.
And then you've got to suddenly be an introducer of somebody, which may not be your energy also. Totally.
And well, I would get way more nervous about the announcements between the feature act and the headliner.
Right.
Than actually doing the set. Because I'm like, oh, I got to get this website right. I got to do this. I got it. You know, because...
And some guys, you go, what do you want for an intro? And they go, been on the Tonight Show 3 times and you know, at Conan once.
Right.
Got it. Other guys, it's like their IMDb page.
Totally. And this was my favorite when I was emceeing, was like, I got a movie coming out called Juana Man. But you never heard of the movie, right?
Right.
You don't know how to spell Juana. Uh-huh. You know? So you're just like, and one time, I don't even know I should tell this. One time I was introducing David Alan Greer, and I almost said Tommy Davidson.
Oh, well.
Because they were both on A Living Color.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, that would have been the end of my life.
Yeah.
If I did that. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Because, like, there was a panic. It was like, what's his name?
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need to know.
Right.
One time I was introducing Todd Glass, and I totally spaced, and I just go, ladies and gentlemen, Todd Glass. And he walked on stage, he goes, that's my intro? That's my intro? He sent me back out. And I had to go back out and introduce him again. Yeah, totally.
But that's perfect for him.
That's him.
Yeah.
He likes to keep it loose like that.
No, I've done that with MCs.
Yeah.
I've called them back up as a joke to do it again, and they love it.
Of course,
they think it's hilarious.
They want the second chance, by the way.
Yeah.
And
they
want the audience to know, I'm buddies with the headliner.
Uh-huh.
We fool around.
Yeah.
We're friends.
Right.
I'm not just this jerk off that you ignore for 5 minutes. Attell's
fun because when he finishes his headliner set, he'll bring up the MC in the feature, or one of them.
Yeah.
And then just fuck around for a while.
Yeah, no, that looks like fun.
Which is really cool. Yeah. But no, it's a tough gig. And I remember there's a woman who's a really good comic in LA called Jen Psaki.
Yeah.
And I forget how it's spelled, but I've said Sochi, I've said Soki, I've said it wrong so many times. And I literally will say to her before I go on, now, which is Saki? And she'll say, yes, Saki, like the ball, Saki.
Yeah.
And then I'll go up, and because I fucked it up once.
Yeah.
Is that funny how you freeze up, dude, when you've done something wrong once?
Dude, I messed up on my podcast. I'm still nervous to say her name. I've known her for 20 years. Christina Bozitsky.
When she
changed her name to Christina P,
I was like, move the mic a little more in front of you.
When she changed her name to Christina P, I was like, thank Christ in heaven.
I know.
You know, I'm like, I can do that.
Is it Pajitsky?
Pajitsky, I believe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I fucked it up a few times,
But I'm self-conscious. And also, as embarrassing as at the Comedy Store, you're bringing up people I've known for decades.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think I know how to pronounce their name, though.
All right.
You know, and it's kind of like, and then I'm thinking about it too much, and I say the wrong, or I mispronounce it.
Yeah.
And they're like, I thought we knew each other.
Right.
There's that weird moment. Like, I thought we knew each other.
Yeah, we had, on the podcast, it's Dulce Sloan, and it's spelled D-U-L-C-E, so I think I said Dulce.
Yeah.
And she corrected me, and I immediately was on my back foot in the interview, because you feel like
totally
you don't know.
Feels like you didn't do your homework.
Yeah.
Your research.
Right.
I was auditioning to be on Chelsea Lately.
Hmm.
To be the announcer.
Oh, you know no what I mean? Kidding.
Bring it back to my announcing skills.
Oh, that's a good gig.
And it would have been a great gig, and it was the same deal. I did it, and they go, okay, Matt, now do it like you want them to watch the show. It's just like, oh, shit. It's Fitzsimmons all over again.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's a good gig, because I worked on a talk show once. It was a daily talk show. And the guy that did the announcing, he was a comic, and he came in for an hour a day, and he got, and it was AFTRA. It was union work. So there was a minimum pay. It was like $800 a day, 5 days a week, and he got all his health benefits, pension.
Dude.
He was there for 9 years
every
week.
That's funny, because that's like considered a long job in showbiz, in freelance work.
Right.
Like, you'd be like, if you told somebody from the Midwest, the job lasted nine years.
Yeah, I know.
They'd be like, how about 35? Or is it even like that in the Midwest anymore? I feel like everyone's, I feel like people don't have like unions and shit like that. Everybody's
unions are going away.
Nowadays.
Pensions are totally going away. It used to be they paid you a pension. Now they open an account for you so you can pay into your own pension.
Right.
But I've been in the Writers Guild for 17 years. Or I've paid into it 17 years, and I got a sweet pension coming up. And I'm taking it early. I can take it now if I want.
Yeah.
And so I got Social Security, which I've been paying into for 35 years.
Totally.
I got my WGA pension. I own my house.
Nice.
We have a rental unit that we get rent from every month.
Beautiful.
And, no debts.
Dude, you're not going anywhere. You're staying right here in California.
I got a house I love.
You won. You won life.
I somehow, it happened about 2 years ago when my kids got out of college, and I was like, I think I did it.
Yeah. No, you did it.
I think I did it.
With room to spare.
Not a lot of room to spare, but I can live a decent life. I can take a couple trips a year.
Yeah. A lot of us comics, it's like 2 minute warning on the clock. It's like, oh, shit.
But the thing is, my pedal's been on the fucking accelerator for 35
years
straight.
I've been listening to episodes of this podcast, and you started when you're 20?
Yeah, in
college. Stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
I mean,
when did you start? How old were you?
I started when I was almost 24, and I was on the slow boat to China, like just doing, like you would never recommend to do a comedy career the way I did it.
Yeah.
I started in L.A., and the upside was there was open mics every night.
Yeah.
And so I did open mics for like 3 years.
Right.
And it was the late 90s.
Starting at 24. Yeah.
You know, and it was a different time where, like, I don't know, at least in L.A., stand-up itself was kind of dead. And, like, I'm just doing these open mics. And then after a while, I'm like, oh, I should try to do this at a club.
Uh-huh.
You know, and after 3 years, I got in at the improv and immediately started working all the improv.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think I waited the proper amount of time. Cause
who was your class coming up? Who were the comics that started exact time?
My
you?
Real class coming up, when I first got here, it was Sam Tripoli.
Uh-huh.
And a guy named, you might not know him, Brett Gilbert. You saw Bob Oshak around.
Oh, love Bob Oshak.
Jason Galern was around.
Those are both very interesting comics.
Yeah. Totally nice guys, too. Totally.
Oshak went the writing direction. He's been very successful.
I know.
As
he
a
works
writer.
For Bill Maher's show, I think.
Yeah.
I see his name. I'm like, that's the guy.
Right.
You know, he was always
I
so funny.
I think he might have started as warm up on the show and then got hired to write for it.
Good for him. That doesn't always happen.
It happened to me on Bill Maher's show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Back when it was politically incorrect York, I was the warm-up guy, and Bill saw my act, and he hired me as a writer.
That's beautiful, man.
My first writing job, yeah.
Good for you. That's great.
Yeah, so Oshak was...
And then later in my class was... it was like a good group of guys. It was me, Tom Segura, Ryan Sickler, Jay Larson, and a guy named Carl DiGregorio.
Uh-huh. People fucked his name up on stage.
Big time. I almost did.
Yeah.
You saw the concentration. That
yes.
That.
You looked off in the other direction.
Like, I better get this right.
Yeah.
You know?
You twitched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. But that was around like 2005. We all started to like, we could feel that we were starting to get some momentum. We could feel that people were starting to pay attention.
Yeah.
And we all were kind of at the same place at the same time, like, enjoying it amongst ourselves. So.
Now, when you saw Segura, because he's playing arenas now.
Yeah.
Did you see something early on that you said, this guy's special?
What the reason I thought Tom was special is because it was, I was maybe 7 years in after my first open mic, and he had just started,
uh-huh.
and he was already funny.
Yeah.
Like, he was already had, like, 10 minutes that were great.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this dude just started?
Yeah.
So in that respect, I was like, this is pretty amazing. And he was just up to speed right away.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like, leadership qualities. So, like, he can look at... I worked for him, actually, like, logging tapes for a reality show.
Oh, really?
And so he was the boss, though. You know how most comics are like, I'm just doing this to get by. But Tom was the boss.
Yeah.
And I see him now. He's like, he runs this big business.
He runs a corporation.
He runs a television studio.
Dude.
You know?
It's no joke. I mean, I've been to his studio in Austin, and it is a floor of an office building. And it's a beehive.
Yeah.
Everybody's hustling and working.
Yep, totally.
And coming to him and yes this, no
totally,
that.
Dude.
Like, if he wasn't a comedian, he would be running a Fortune 500
You totally
company.
Get that impression.
Yeah.
And that's like how I met him. And that's, I worked for him and I quit in the worst way. Like, I had I was working nights. Like, he let me log tape.
Yeah.
For this reality show from like 11 p.m. to like 8 in the morning.
Oh, no
right?
shit.
Which was great because I was in a band and I did stand up. And
yeah.
So I needed that time at night to do it.
Yeah.
But also, that's the worst hours to work. Like, I just kind of lost my mind a little bit.
You're just alone, I would imagine.
Alone, and you think you can sleep during the day, but you really can't.
Yeah.
Not that well.
Right.
I mean, of course, there's the land at the hotel, sneak in an hour of sleep, and then go to the gig.
Yeah.
That's different. Trying to get 8 hours during the day is.
So I didn't know you were in a band. What was the band?
I was in a band. We never got past practice.
Oh.
But the good news is the drummer is now my podcast host.
Okay.
So on the Full Charge Power Hour, my podcast.
Yeah.
But anyway, long story short, I had a rough 30th birthday. My roommate brought this girl I liked to my birthday party and kind of made out with her in front of me.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like shit.
Yeah.
And I was turning 30 and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with my life.
Right.
Even though I was doing stand-up, I wasn't getting anywhere or anything. Uh-huh. And my cousin came by for dinner before I went to work and I had a couple drinks with her. And then I at 3 a.m. at the tape logging thing, I just sent Tom an email that was like, yeah, I quit, man. I'm out of here. And I just walked out and just like, I just went away, which is weird for me. I'm a very responsible guy.
Uh-huh.
But at 30, I hadn't gotten anywhere. And I felt like, fuck all this being responsible. Like I see all these dirtbag comics acting up and like, and the world is their oyster, I'm going to start to become a fuck up. Didn't work out so well. The point is, it's weird. Tom has taken me all over the world as an opening act.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was Tom Segura. Like, I totally fucked him over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was such a responsible adult at the time. I came to pick up a paycheck, and he was like, come on, let's go outside and talk. He lit up a cigarette, and he's like, I think it was really terrible the way you quit and everything. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, and I got like so self-conscious that I just started laughing, and he started laughing too.
Yeah.
And at the time, I thought we were sharing a laugh at how like awkward it was.
Uh-huh.
But now that I know him, I know he was laughing at me like, this guy's fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, this guy's fucking crazy.
Right.
I'm never taking this guy on tour.
And then
but there
did.
I am in Japan, fucking hanging with Tom.
Yeah, you do some pretty sweet tours. You go out with Tom, and who else do you go out with? Tosh?
I used to go out with Daniel Tosh all the time.
Right.
Which was really fun it was that sweet spot, especially for his career, where like social media hadn't really taken over yet.
Uh-huh.
It was just kind of like all about the stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And he had kind of like a nerdy intellectual audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so awesome. It was the first time I got to play theaters or anything. And it was just...
Did you meet a lot of girls on the tour?
Not a lot of girls, because that's the diff... It was like theaters by the time I started working with them.
Yeah.
So you're not walking into the bar area of the theater. You're just kind of backstage. And you're also there to be good company to Tosh. And I had a girlfriend for most of that run.
Oh.
So it was like...
Yeah.
The answer's no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he seems like the kind of guy that attracts a lot of attractive women to his audience.
Right. But he had a girlfriend at the time, too.
Yeah,
so
right.
No capitalizing on
it. Dude,
any
you
got
to bring it. My opener is a guy. I don't know if I should say his name, but.
You talking about Dean? Oh, sorry. Am I not supposed to say his name?
Dean Del Rey is not my guy.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about a guy named.
Yeah, DC. Is this initials?
Yeah, you were talking about on the Ian Bagg episode.
Oh, okay. Oh, and did I describe what he's like on the road?
It's a different name now that I remember. Yeah, he gets laid a lot.
He gets laid not just once, several times in the weekend. And he's not an operator. He doesn't seem to be an operator. He's a laid-back dude. Just a skinny black guy from the Midwest.
I'm listening.
And he just like, it just happens.
Yeah.
I saw it one time, this girl came out and she was with her father. And they came to the merch table and the father's with his daughter and they take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then the father goes, I got to go to the bathroom. And they exchange numbers. And he told me the next night that she hooked up with him that
night. That did happen to me one time. A girl came up to me in Miami, and first of all, I had accidentally stood up Bobby Slayton for dinner.
Oh,
like he's like, let's go to dinner tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, all right, great. You know, I'm just starting to do the road. I love Bobby Slayton, and I go, what's your room number? I'll call you. And he's like, Slayton. And I'm like, no, what's your room number? You know, like, so I'm gonna call him. He's like, Slayton, ask for Bobby Slayton.
Yeah.
Like, you dumb fuck.
Yeah.
And I asked for Bobby Slayton at his hotel, and they wouldn't put me through.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I finally get him on the phone at some point, and he's just like, I waited till 4 o'clock, and then I was just like, fuck him.
Yeah.
He goes, you should have come out. He's like, juicy steaks, ice cold beers. You fucked up. And then at the club, I see him, and he's like, don't even talk to me. And I'm like,
no
dude,
shit.
what the fuck? I'm trying to explain it. He's not having it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking to this pretty girl afterwards, and he's trying to, like, cock block me, even though he's married.
Uh-huh.
And I say this with love. I love Bobby Slayton. And then at one point, she this happens with attractive women. They're always losing their purse or something.
Yeah.
And she's like, I lost my purse. And Bobby's all over the club looking for the purse.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no, I'm just sitting here. I'm not getting backed up and all this. Then she takes off and some other girl comes up with her dad. And like, he's kind of earshot. And she gives me the number. And we're hanging out. I'm working there the next week with Dice Clay, which I got fired from, by the way.
This is in Vegas, my life. Did you say?
This was at the Miami Improv.
Oh, Miami, right.
Yeah, but I'm there for like a whole nother week, and so now I got my Miami girlfriend. It was beautiful times to be alive.
That's a good week. That's a good week. But, yeah, I was always, I was married or dating my girlfriend since I was 30. So in my 20s, I wasn't big enough to really attract women. And then I met my wife when I was 30.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, because I knew when I met her. And things were just happening for me. And I knew when I met her that she was going to be my wife. I said it to her friend. Her friend introduced us. I said, I'm marrying your friend.
And you had a long-term girlfriend right before that, right?
Yeah.
So it hit you like a ton of bricks. You're like, that's what it's supposed to be like.
I had
You're like, this vibe.
I had 6 months in between where I had my own apartment in New York City. I had just done Letterman. I had like a lot of stuff going. And it was good. It was really good. And then I meet her and I'm like, fuck, yeah. I wanted another year of this.
Yeah, nope, and so, you got to lock it down now.
And I wanted to marry her right away, but then I said, I got to know, because I had cheated on my ex-girlfriends. Uh-huh. And I was like, I can't do that to her. I can't do that to myself. Like, I just, you know, so I got to see if I can do this.
Yeah.
So we start dating, and I say, all right, I'm going to give myself like 2 years. See okay. if I can do it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And the next week, I get a job hosting a game show on MTV.
Nice.
Which lasts for 2 seasons, which means I'm doing college shows, and now I'm making big money. And I got tons of girls in the audience.
Right.
And I got through 2 years of that.
That's love.
And I was like, all right, now I know we can get married.
Yeah.
And then I proposed.
Right. That's beautiful.
And I've since cheated on her like it's a varsity sport. Well,
you have to.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I did those 2 years.
You got to stay sane.
Yeah.
After that 2 years of being a good guy.
Well, also, look at me now. Cheating now, it's a much higher threshold. The bar is a lot higher for me to get a woman.
Oh, dude, it gets harder. Who knew?
She can't begrudge me that. No.
You deserve it.
Yeah, I deserve it.
You work hard.
I earned it.
Your house is paid off. You have
no
debt.
Yeah, right. If I divorce now, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I love my wife.
I assumed.
I'm Jesus Christ. I'm trying to think. I know one friend of mine who cheats on his wife, and he's totally comfortable with it. He doesn't do it a lot, but when he does, he's just like, yeah, it was great.
I met somebody recently who was just like, yeah, I finally found my soulmate side piece.
Really?
And he's got a wife. He's like, but I finally found who's going to be my side piece for like forever.
No
like
shit.
Like committing to a side piece.
Really?
And yeah, he's like, I'm in love.
She was comfortable with the role?
I suppose. I didn't ask too much. It made me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right.
But
Italian?
I thought it was hilarious. I don't think he's Italian, but he's definitely East Coast.
Yeah.
Like the East Coast flavor,
uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to me that the previous generation, you might even have to go back 2 generations, that the side piece was almost accepted by everybody. Wives, everybody.
Yeah, Fridays were for wives, but Saturdays were always for girlfriends.
Right,
it's a Goodfellas, right?
Yep, and my dad didn't cheat. I would have known.
Yeah, I don't think my dad did either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what if, say you wanted to try having sex with a guy.
Okay.
Do you think your wife would be like, well, it's a life experience you've never had. I'll give you a pass on a guy.
My wife would consider it.
She would.
She's like cool like that.
Yeah.
And she constantly brings up like cheating to the point where I'm like, do you want me to cheat?
Oh, really?
She's always just pointing out other women or like, you know that bullshit where you have a list of celebrities you could bang?
Yeah.
She's always asking me to add to it or create it. I got no list.
Yeah.
Like I got married at 47. I'm not looking to play the field.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'm smart enough to know it's a bad idea to really cheat, but B, like, why even joke about it? Because I feel like things are going to come back and bite you in the ass sooner or later. Because then, like, one time I had, like, a bottle of, if she finds something in the house that she doesn't recognize, she thinks I'm cheating.
Yeah.
Like, I had a bottle of her conditioner on my end table one time, and she was just like, what's that? I'm like, it's conditioner. She's like, why is it in here? She had been out of town.
Uh-huh.
Why is it in here? And I'm like, I was using it to jerk off.
And
she's just like, oh, thank God. Thank God you're only jerking off.
That's
like, well, I'm not only jerking off.
Yeah.
It's Pandora's box when you're gone.
She's like, why is your pubic hair so shiny and soft?
I can put a comb right through it, a brush.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. But and I heard you and Ian talking about this. You never like trim your pubes or anything when your wife is out of town.
Nope.
Or when you're out of town because it's red flag.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And come when she comes back, be horny.
Oh yeah.
Be sex starved.
Sure.
When I come off the road, I throw a move right away. It's not going to be accepted generally.
Sure.
But you throw it.
Yeah. The suggestion, the effort.
Yeah, I think it's thoughtful.
The passion.
Yeah.
A
passionate and then a pass, but it's an appreciative pass.
Oh man, you got to show appreciation.
Yeah,
that's something I didn't know as a young man.
Right.
Like just put they tell you exactly what they want you to do,
mm-hmm.
not in the moment.
Yeah.
But like, oh, you know, treat her like she's the most beautiful woman in the world, which my wife is.
She was standing naked today. She got up and she's putting her clothes on, and I grabbed her from behind and I rolled over onto the bed with her on top of me and was grabbing her tits, and she was squirming and saying, get off of me, but she was laughing.
Yeah.
And I knew we weren't going to have sex.
Sure.
But I just got off the road.
Yeah.
She needs that.
She needs some attention.
Yes.
She needs to know that you want to fuck her.
Right. And when did you first start thinking about having sex with a man?
About 5 minutes ago. I think your producer can actually lock it down to what time of day it was.
Would she consider a three-way, or have you had a three-way with her?
She would, but I'm not messing with that.
The closest you came to it with her?
With her? Not her suggesting that it would be okay if we did.
She
or
did.
Like her pointing out a certain bartender in
really?
Brooklyn. But I'm too smart for all that. That's not going to go well.
In what way?
I don't think it's good for a relationship.
Lay out the scenarios for me.
She sees me enjoying myself.
Yeah.
She's fine with the idea. Ha, ha, ha. Wouldn't that be cute? I'm open-minded. I'm a woman of 2025.
Yeah.
Then she actually sees it.
Yeah.
And she's like, you like her more than me.
Right.
That type of scenario.
Yeah, because you, while making love to this other woman, you have to make sure you're showing. And meanwhile, that's like, you know, pulling up to a Ferrari dealership in a, you know, a Miata. Right. And being excited about the new Mustang.
Sure. But the Miata's watching you like, oh, I guess we're all paid off, but I guess it's not good enough for you.
I mean, when I think about the positions, they have to almost always involve eye contact with your wife.
You have to put a lot of effort into it, and you have to make sure that she feels like she's the most important person there. And at that point, it's like, why even bother?
Well, in a three-way.
It's overrated in the first place, by the way.
Have you had three ways?
I have. Just one.
Who was the other guy?
Do you know
Tosh?
Louis C.K.? You're friends with him, right?
So, yeah, I've actually had the Devil's Three-Way twice.
Oh, yeah?
The two guys. Or the Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Some call it
me.
The Kavanaugh now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not bad. It's not bad. It's a young man's sport.
Sure. These are all young man's sports.
Yes. But I think with the three-way, not everybody's being gratified at all times. Sometimes you're like a caddy, and so you got to make sure your wife's not the caddy. There needs to always be somebody making her happy.
Yeah, for sure. And that gets complicated.
Yes.
You've got to plan this.
Yeah.
Like a video production.
Now, I remember there was a great Seinfeld episode where Jerry and George are planning a three-way for Jerry to have.
Yeah.
And George had stayed up all night, and he had flow charts.
Like an old
and pie
movie.
Charts. Yep. Like, and he showed up the next day, his hair is ruffled, his shirt's fucked up, and he's got these graphs, and he shows Jerry how it can work, and then he looks at me and goes, do you ever get on your knees and thank God that you have access to my dementia?
I love it.
Greatest line in Seinfeld history.
And I love when the three-way gets approved.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, I would need robes and lotions and orgy friends.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can plan a three-way. I think a three-way just has to happen.
Unless you're the guy, like my wife said to me that she'd be up for it as long as it happened spontaneously.
Okay.
And we got real close one night. We were at this... It was like a premiere party, and it was cocktail,
mm-hmm.
a cocktail lounge. It was dark. It was cool music,
right.
And it had a good vibe.
Yeah.
And this publicist comes over, and she's in like a sexy black mini skirt suit, you know, and she sits down with us, but she's focusing on my wife.
Right.
And my wife is super hot.
Yeah.
Hotter than your wife. And she puts her she puts her hand on my wife's knee,
mm-hmm.
and I go, all right, I need to keep this going. So I keep going to the bar and bringing drinks out,
right.
bringing drinks. This is going on for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to go like, all right, let's get to the valet.
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure out the car. I'm planning whose car we're going to take.
Right.
Do we go hotel? I was thinking hotel.
Sure.
And so, and then some, it was like, who was it that came over? I can't remember the celebrity came over who was a client and fucking yanked her out so that he could talk about his sketch. And it just was over. And so I thought to myself, the move is I go to a high-end escort agency.
Okay.
And I hire a woman and I tell her what restaurant we're going to be at and then have her show up and flirt with us.
Yeah.
And then it's an easy close.
Right. Do you think your wife would be upset if it works out
yeah.
and then she finds out that you hired someone?
Yeah, like we're all putting our clothes on and her phone rings and she's like, yeah, I'll meet you at the Marriott.
Or you're like, honey, do you have any cash?
Minutes. Yeah. Yeah. You take Venmo?
Like $200-$300 on you? Your wife would be like, what the fuck?
Well, plus the tip.
She's all exhausted.
Plus the tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now that would be, especially if you were really going at it with the hooker and then the hooker's, she takes the call.
Yeah.
And the wife's, she's sitting 3 feet away going, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, 2:30? Yeah, I can be there.
Yeah. Well, what about your wife? Did she ever have a three-way? Have you asked her?
Yeah. In fact, one time we were having dinner and she's like, oh my God, look who's calling me. She holds up her phone and it just says three-way.
No way.
She's like, yeah, I used to have three ways with this couple. I'm like, we're past this. We're past us casually talking about,
yeah,
you know.
You don't, like, you didn't want to know.
At that moment, I mean, who really cares, right? But
yeah.
At that moment, I was like, you don't have to tell me everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me three ways calling you right now. Trying to enjoy the salad. And you're talking about
so it was a couple.
Dick and pussy pass.
Was it multiple times or was it a one time?
I didn't ask too many questions.
Should we call her?
Yeah, let's call her right now. I'm an orgy in her phone. That's how we met.
It just says him.
Yeah.
Him dot dot dot. Yeah. Well, I've never had phone sex.
I've never had phone sex either. I've done a couple texting back and forth, which
yeah.
is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because you're just working that phone. And this one of the times it was on one of those old burner phones.
Yeah.
Where you have to press it like 1, 2, 3, C.
Oh God. Yeah, yeah.
1, 2,
yeah.
U.
Right.
You know, so it's just taking forever.
Yeah.
But what can I tell you? It was exciting at the time.
Jesus.
But I'm not necessarily into it. I've never called a 900 number.
Never called a 900 number.
Yeah.
I've never paid for a video on the internet.
Yeah, me neither.
I can't even remember buying a porn magazine.
I did. Especially when I first moved to... I remember I bought a penthouse from like a really nice
bookstore. If I was going to buy one, it would be a penthouse, yeah.
And it was in Maryland. It was in like a very suburban area. And I took the penthouse up to the front counter. And this young, cute girl, she's like, hey,
yeah.
You know, because I was young and cute. Uh-huh. She was young and cute, like, hey. And then I didn't even buy anything else. You're supposed to buy books
right.
and a penthouse. And she just immediately, like, lost her smile.
Oh, no.
I was kind of pissed. I don't know. I don't think that's as much a faux pas today. It'd be more like, why are you buying a magazine in general?
Well, I was thinking about this because, you know, there's a few states where when you go there, I don't know if you've experienced this, but
I have.
If you go to Texas and you try to watch porn,
you can't.
It stops you, and then you have to actually hold up your driver's license to the camera to get through, which is like such a fucking invasion. It's like hard to imagine. So I do it. and I get through, and now I'm like, I'm on the grid. Now I'm sure, like, they're watching me through the camera on my...
Yeah, of course.
Because now they've used the camera
Dude,
on me.
And they got your face and your name and your address.
So I got a Band-Aid out of my medicine bag, and
sure.
I put it over
the camera.
The camera.
Yeah. It's a good plan. You should really be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
What would you do if someone's like, we got your jerk-off video, we can send it to you. To prove that we have it, like, give us $500,000.
Well, did you see that episode of Black Mirror?
The one with the pig?
No.
Oh, what was it?
There's one where there's a teenage kid and he's jerking off and mm-hmm. they send him a video.
Oh, yeah?
And they say, we also have all your email addresses and we're going to blast it to everybody.
Right, right.
If you don't, and they had him go kill somebody.
Yeah, I think I have seen this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I mean, I'm sure it happens. Like, who knows? I mean, those cameras are sitting there. I actually bought a Switch. There's a little sliding thing you can put on and off.
Yeah.
That I have. And I just think, like, you know. Well, anyway, getting back to the reason I brought it up is that now it's illegal, and I wonder if magazines are going to come back, and it's almost going to be like, you know how hipsters have vinyl now?
Yeah.
I wonder if hipsters are going to go to, like, magazines.
Yeah. I had a joke for a little bit. Like, I'm going to be telling my grandchildren I used to jerk off to still photographs.
Yeah.
But, like, how crazy is that? Like, yeah. It's just a picture. It's a major regression, but I like what you're saying, and I think it could happen.
Yeah.
And with the abortion thing, I'm sure it's all vasectomies and magazines at some of these places.
Right. Yeah. I can remember the first time I didn't see a porn. I mean, how old are you?
I'm 50.
All right. So you maybe saw porn earlier than I did. I'm 58 and I literally did not see porn. I saw it once when I was about 13 and my best friend was this kid, David Arengren, and he lived down in the projects.
Okay.
We had projects where I grew up.
Okay.
And so I'm sitting in his apartment with his older brother, Hector.
Okay.
Who's now in jail for life for cocaine trafficking.
All right. Congratulations, Hector.
And so Hector had a reel-to-reel projector, and he was showing porn.
Right.
And Hector was probably 5 years older than us.
Okay.
And I'm watching the porn, and then he reaches over, and I had a boner, and he grabs it, and he goes, "Hey, you get a little excited there, huh?" He had this Colombian accent. "Hey, look at you, huh? Got a banana in your pants."
Right.
And, like, I remember being, it was awkward.
Well,
but it wasn't until years later where I went, like, oh, no, that was, like, borderline molestation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's the Different Strokes episode come to life.
Yeah.
But you already, like, at that time, I don't know what it's like now, but I felt like disturbed after I saw porn, even though I was drawn to it.
Yeah.
I was like, I grew up Catholic, went to Catholic school, and it wasn't like nobody told you about porn. You just stumble upon it one day. Like, my friend's dad had some magazines and he stole them and we had them in our clubhouse and we just look at the porn together, like three or four of us, and you are getting a chubby. Luckily, nobody grabbed my stuff, but
you guys never did, like, jerk.
No.
A lot of guys jerk off in front of each other when they're kids.
Yeah, I've heard about this. I've heard my friend said he had, and this was like 18, 19, 20 years old. My friend had these skateboarder friends who would watch porn together and put newspaper down on the floor.
No. Yeah. Really? I wonder what section they used.
And they tried to, probably not the sports section.
No.
It's too distracting.
No.
But I mean,
entertainment.
Like, nobody cared about the news when you're 20 years old in 1993. Like, it's a different world. We didn't care about politics
or
anything like that.
Right.
Government was boring and you could come all over Bill Clinton's face.
Or Monica.
Sure.
And then you got, now it's like, we got a magazine and, like you said, you got it from your friend's dad. You didn't have any choice. I can remember Barbie Benton was like the celebrity that was nude. And I got to know her very well. Like, that was, I didn't have a lot of choice. I had like two magazines under my mattress.
Right.
And I looked at them for years.
Yeah.
So you had to use your imagination.
You did. And you had to just take whatever you could find. I remember we would pass around skateboard videos on VHS, you know,
because
they were hard to get. Skate shops weren't really near my place. And there was one, it was like two skate videos. And then all of a sudden, Hard Bodies was on.
Oh.
And so now I'm watching Hard Bodies, which is pretty, it's both tame and gratuitous compared to nowadays. Cause
Wait, what's Hard Bodies?
Hard Bodies is this movie where everybody's just in a bikini.
Okay.
And their breasts are always out for no reason. There's there's like a photo shoot scene. I never made it past that scene.
Yeah.
It's one of those cable movies.
Like USA Network late at
night. Yeah, it's almost like softcore porn in a way.
Right.
And it's just, I mean, these were innocent times. You'd be super excited. The flip side of that is there were just nipples in a movie. Every chance they could get, there would be a topless woman.
Yes.
For no reason
even
at all.
Even in comedies.
Yeah, especially in comedies.
Like, there's very few comedies in history that used nudity productively. Like, I think Animal House did, because it was so much a part of their mindset.
Yeah, but think about how they use it productively. It's like guys spying on women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like it's not that productive,
right?
It didn't push the story. Yeah, even in Stripes, John Larroquette has the binoculars and he's looking at the women's showers.
Right,
like there's going to be 20 hot women in the army. Or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, right.
No offense out there, but 20? 20?
Yeah, I mean it's like Porky's.
It's based around nudity.
Yeah, but if you watch Porky's today. I rewatched it because it was like the 50th anniversary and they sent me the DVDs because they wanted me to interview somebody from the movie. And I watched it. Dude, it's a dark movie.
It's about
serious issues.
It's about racism and child abuse and stuff.
It's about racism, child abuse, abortion, all happening. I think it's in like Indiana.
Yeah. So the first half of the movie is all these teenage problems in the 50s, and you're like, whoa, this is going on in the 50s? And then the last half hour is them just, like, attacking Porky's house.
Yeah, and there's Nazis.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Right. It's crazy. So I forgot, you're, like, a real cinemaphile.
I know what I know.
Yeah.
I'm like Beetlejuice.
What
I know.
Right, yeah. You and I got to know each other. We were writing on a TV show for Bill Burr's company this past year.
Yeah.
We have no idea where it's at now because there was a corporate restructuring.
Yeah.
Which is just like 90% of the projects I've worked on in my life get lost in a corporate restructuring.
There's always some change. There's always some this, some that.
Yeah.
And you can't really get any answers as to where.
No, that's why
happening.
You got to always have three to five things happening
totally.
At any given time.
Yeah.
Even if three of them are things that you create from scratch.
Yeah.
Like a podcast.
That's what I was going to say.
How long's your podcast been going on?
It's been going on and off for like 12 years.
On and off.
Well, I did it for like 10 years and I was just like, I can't, because I moved to New York and I was doing it over Zoom with my co-host, and I'm like, I just kind of got tired of it.
Right.
And, but then I missed it and I brought it back, especially when I came back to LA and had a great studio over at All Things Comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Which, we got the good video.
So did you find a drop off in your viewership when you came back?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I don't recommend.
Yeah, because
anything.
I've been doing this for 14 years, and I'm so burnt, and I would love to take 6 months off, but I just know that my listenership would just go away.
You can't. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep going, and even if you're just putting out like 20 minutes or a half an hour 1 week or whatever.
That's true.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Just point it out. It's about the consistency. That's what Tom Segura told me as soon as I started my first podcast. He was like, it's about consistency. Make sure it comes out on the same day every week.
Yeah.
And again, management skills, like I would have never known that. But
I know.
Of course, that makes perfect sense.
I know. I want to do, it's weird. I have three podcasts now, and I feel like I want to do one.
Everyone's got two.
Yeah, everyone's got two.
Three's a lot.
Three, well,
three
it's,
is a lot.
One of them's every other week, and it's really easy.
Yeah.
We just basically, it's me and Allison Rosen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I like her.
Yeah. So we do a thing called Childish where, I've got grown kids, she's got little kids, and I'm teaching her how to parent.
That's cool.
But she's not really buying it.
That's a really good thing, because like when we first started podcasts, it was like, hey, I'm a comedian and I'm telling you about my week, which was like very valuable information back then. Now everybody knows everything.
Yeah.
I got off stage in Cleveland one time and this audience member wanted to go over my set and be like, you messed up front, you really got him at the end. And I'm like, this isn't like
people always say to me, because I sell my merch after the show.
Yeah.
And they always, and I would stand out front anyway, because I generally like to thank people for coming.
Yeah.
And inevitably somebody goes, hey, I got a tag for you. And I always go, no, thank you. I go, there's absolutely no chance that it's going to be something I would use.
And then you have to sit through it. They think they're going to spit it out in 10 seconds. It takes a minute and a half.
And now 20 people have walked by that you could have been
totally.
Selling your merch to that you missed, so that you can hear this.
This you're never going to use this tag.
It's if it happened on the street, I might be like, okay.
Sure.
But I'm trying to move merch, baby.
They're fucking you up.
I got pins that people need to be wearing.
They're fucking you up.
All right, let's get to fastballs with Fitz.
Okay.
You still swimming?
I'm still swimming. It's kind of the answer to my middle-age problems. It keeps me calm. keeps my blood pressure down.
You don't sweat when you're working out? That's the best part about swimming.
You're sweating.
Oh, really?
You're sweating. Like, you, when you get out of the pool, you know you've been sweating.
Really?
I mean, it's really gross to swim in a public pool if you think
about
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to think about it that much.
I don't swim in public. I won't do it.
I'm fine
with it.
Especially
if there's kids in there.
Yeah, I'm just like, whatever. And these are public pools, and so it's already kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Like, there's no lockers. You have to hand your bag to a locker attendant.
Yeah.
And then there's also, like, homeless people using the sinks and the showers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it's not that bad until you see someone shaving, and then you're like, this is too much.
And do you find you loiter in the men's room more than most guys would?
Yeah. I'm trying to get a devil's three-way going with my wife. I want to recruit people. No, you know what's crazy is this is unprecedented. I've been around for half a century. This locker room, they'll talk to you. You're not allowed to be nude in the locker room.
Not allowed?
You're not allowed to be naked in the locker room. You're supposed to go to...
Oh, because there's boys in there?
Yeah, or whatever. And so instead of like policing the whole thing, they're just like cut and dry rule. But it's the locker room.
So what do they have, little changing rooms you go in?
They call them changing rooms. They're fucking toilets.
Oh.
Anyways, I love going there. I make it sound like I don't, but...
Well, the worst thing about a toilet in a locker room for a pool is that normally I can gauge if it's wet around the bowl.
Sure.
I take a very wide stance.
Sure.
Because I assume it's urine.
But in a pool,
it's wet because some people are coming out of the pool.
Always assume it's urine.
Yes.
You know?
I'm going to sell those t-shirts after my show.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Who's your best male friend?
That's a tough one. I can think of two people, and I'd hate to choose right now. I'm going to go with my buddy Tim. I also love my buddy Randy. I've known Tim since we were both 14 years old. We were in a homeroom together, and he lives a mile from me here in Los Angeles. And he's a professional graffiti artist.
Really?
It's always interesting to talk to him.
Was he like that when he was 14? Was he an artist?
He was always an artist. Yeah. And then we went to college together. So we've had a lot of the same things. And I got these skateboarders to come over to the dorm room, you know, because I was way into skateboarding.
Yeah.
But they're graffiti writers. And so next thing I know, everyone's just sitting around the dorm room sketching in their pads.
Uh-huh.
And I got nobody to skate with.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They totally turned. It's kind of cool that he's been in the Smithsonian. And I was there the first day he broke graffiti.
That's really cool.
I told my buddy Tosh, I was like, yeah, my friend's in the Smithsonian for graffiti. And he's like, wow, he must be really good at vandalism.
What's the closest you ever got to a fist fight on stage?
I don't know about a fist fight. There was somebody, I was in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, and this dude was getting mad, and he looked kind of like a Capitol rioter, and he was getting up, and then I did something about abortion, and he kind of lost his mind, and there was no security there, and there was also no green room there, so I just kind of told the, I played the best gigs, Greg, and I told the owner, he goes over and he talks to the guy, and he comes back, he goes, He don't want to fight you. I'm like, you're just going to take his word for it? Can't you take my word for it? So I'm just hiding in the sound booth like a coward.
Wow.
You know?
How long ago was this?
This is 2019.
Damn.
Yeah. So that's probably the closest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've
gotten in too many confrontations on stage. I used to take the bait. I used to think it was kind of like hockey. And if somebody wanted to disrespect you, it was time to fucking go.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like part of the show.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that anymore.
No.
I think it's just kind of like, say your thing. All right. Fair enough. And then if you got something, say it back to them. But like the whole fighting is crazy.
Depends on my mood. There's times where if a guy challenges me and I really hate everything he stands for.
Sure.
Then I can get into the mode where if there's door guys, I do this. I will try to implode that guy from the inside out.
Right.
I will find out his weak spot.
Right.
And I will play on it. And I'll use his words against him.
Wow.
Until the crowd is laughing at him.
Yeah.
And then I want his head to explode.
Sure, yeah.
And then they have to drag him out screaming.
Right.
Now, that's not my first choice, but if I'm in the wrong mood,
yeah,
I will do that.
Yeah. Hey, fair enough. Sounds like it works.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're good at it.
Yeah.
And are you saying they always have to be dragged out, or do they eventually get humiliated enough that they just shut up and keep watching the show?
Yeah, sometimes they do that.
Yeah.
Which is not as good as them being thrown out.
Okay,
because
like
when they get thrown out, you got five. Once they get thrown out, you've got 5 to 10 minutes of deconstructing what just happened.
Yeah.
To roars from the audience.
Yeah.
You're a fucking hero
right,
to them
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Because you've purged somebody bad out of the crowd.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was opening for Steve-O a long time ago when he first started doing stand up, and I remember I kicked somebody out, and they said Steve-O was in the green room like, the opener can kick people out. It's like, this one did.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Who's your best Asian friend?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to say Kevin Shea.
Oh, Kevin Shea.
Guy out of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Sure.
He really is my Irish friend, though.
Uh-huh.
His last name's Shea, and we used to get hammered together.
Yeah.
And just roll around Hollywood and He was a funny kid. He's bad cop.
Yeah.
Like, he would say kind of shitty things to people, and I'd be like, and then I would come in and be like, hey, yeah, this guy's all right. He's just fucking dumb or whatever.
Yeah.
And we would meet a lot of people playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing a game. It's just who we are as people, you know.
All right. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
When's the last time you apologized to somebody?
I was thinking about that because I was listening to another episode, and it's probably to my wife, because I think I apologize at least once a week, but because of that I can't remember specifically what I was apologizing about. But I do know I was kind of to go about 6 months back, I was trashing her gift giving skills on my podcast.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of been like gift shamed in the relationship. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's always kind of like, you can tell this gift isn't good enough, and like it gets to the sisters, and they kind of, it's kind of like a group analysis.
Yeah.
To the point where I do a good job, the whole family calls me and they're like, you crushed it.
There you go.
And she's a great gift giver, but she's not a perfect gift giver. In other words, she has given something that's not a home run before, but
yeah.
I'm always like, it's great. And I was just kind of, it was a weird thing where like my co-host was asking me questions too quickly,
yeah,
and I didn't have a time to think about anything. And then I just said all this shit and I'm like, but I got to put out this podcast. I got nothing in the bank. And I felt bad for her because she does put.
Does she listen to your podcast?
She, at certain times.
Dude, that's got to stop.
Becomes like a producer.
Oh.
Like, hey, I didn't really say that.
Oh,
you know what
shit.
I mean?
Wait, is she there when you're taping it?
No.
But
no,
she
no,
listens
no.
to it later?
She loves me so much that like, we're not hanging out and I'll be like, oh, cool, I finally got some time to myself to write or whatever. I'll go out in the living room and she's listening to my podcast.
Dude, so that's like, it's like reading your diary.
It's stopped. You know, it's kind of dissipated.
Yeah.
Naturally. And that's just how it's going.
I think that's the reason why our marriage lasted. She has never once listened to one of my podcasts. And she comes to see me do stand-up once a year at my St. Patrick's Day show.
My wife's like Lucy Ricardo. She's like, I want to come to the show.
Really?
Yeah. And I have to divvy it out. Because most shows, you don't want to bring what me and my friend would call luggage. Like, you don't want
to be
navigating
yeah.
some of these jerky guys or like, and you need to go here and you need to go there and you need to get your head together.
Hey, you're
and
at
you
work.
Need to be anonymous and you're at work.
You're at work.
I remember one time I was hanging with Gene Pompa at the Comedy and Magic Club, and a guy named Daniel Kino came by with his girlfriend, and Gene said something that embarrassed the shit out of the girlfriend. I forget why, what he said. Then they walk in and Gene turns to me and goes, that's why I don't bring my girlfriend to work. Mm. Somebody always says something stupid.
Right, right.
It's like, it was you.
Yeah.
You're the one that said something stupid. You're the asshole.
All right, Matt.
Yes.
What can I say? You, we've been trying to get you on this show for a long time.
Yes,
I'm glad it finally happened.
Yes, perfect time.
You were a great guest.
Thank you. I'm going on tour. I wanted to plug
I know.
You.
I got your dates. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I got your fucking dates.
Oh, good.
You're going to be at Flappers this week.
That's
in Burbank.
True. Yeah, Sunday.
March 20th in Louisville.
Yeah.
Don't say Louisville. They get very upset.
I know. I'm no rookie.
March 21st in Cincinnati. Oh, Cincinnati.
Did I spell it wrong?
No, I purposely said it wrong.
Cincinnati.
March 23rd in Nashville.
Yes.
That's a fun town.
Totally. Love
Nashville. You ever been to the Ryman Auditorium?
I've never been there, no.
Try to get in and see a show there if you can.
All right.
I think it's the best venue to see music in the country.
Right.
April 17th in Cambridge, Mass., which is just outside of Boston. It's where Harvard and MIT is.
Yeah, I got an update. I'll also be in Brooklyn, New York prior
Got that.
To that date.
Oh, yeah.
On the 16th.
April 16th in Brooklyn. Yep. Weathersfield, Connecticut, April 18th and 19th. I was in a relationship for three years with three girls. See? You got
really?
Me thinking about it now.
All in the same part of the country?
No. I dated one girl from Weathersfield, Connecticut for 3 years.
Okay.
But she was from Old Weathersfield.
Gotcha.
Because in Connecticut, they're always trying to differentiate.
Yeah. I was somewhere up there in Connecticut, like real ritzy, staying in a hotel, and everyone was so rich at the bar, they wouldn't move out of my way.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the right clothes on or whatever. Like, excuse me, and they like wouldn't even look at me.
No, Connecticut is really
but Richfield, Connecticut.
But this woman, Cindy Murtha was her name, and she was the best girlfriend.
Yeah.
She was the coolest chick. I really loved her. It was the first time I loved somebody outside
That's
my
beautiful.
Family.
That's nice.
Palm Coast, Florida on May 30th.
Yeah.
July 10th in San Diego. If you want to get tickets, go to fullcharge.com.
It's actually thefullcharge.com.
Right. And also on socials, thefullcharge, if you want to follow him and stay involved in his life.
Follow me. I put out the clips. I entertain the people.
It's great what you do.
Thank
Selfless.
You. Yeah. Okay. Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I get nothing out of it.
No.
Some days I don't. Most of the time I do.
Hey, you can always go for a swim.
Exactly.
Matt, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
God
bless
America.
This has been a ton
of fun. Yeah.
We do it for the country.
Do it for the country.
Yeah.
What's left of it?
You said it, I didn't.